The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It is time for everyone's favorite Monday football tradition, Beyond the Box Score, of course. Welcome to the show, everybody, here on this Monday afternoon. Adam Azer, Dan Schneier, and Jacob Gibbs. Simple stats, or no, advanced stats from simple people. Can't even get the tagline right. This is Beyond the Box Score. We'll tell you about the advanced stuff under the hood from week 9, things you need to know about. Of course, snap shares, but target per route run and all these things that you never even heard of that you're going to find very interesting here. Plus our 4 big topics today, Justin Fields versus Justin Herbert, James Conner, Leonard Fournette, David Montgomery, TJ Hockenson. They're all part of 4 big topics. So we welcome you and hope you had an awesome football Sunday and are ready for a little Monday night football tonight. It could be a good game. All right, Jacob, welcome back to the show. You are always in a new location, always looking different on video, but that's okay. We're glad to have you here. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. We got to see 78 Patrick Mahomes dropbacks this week, so like, I cannot complain. Chiefs not got a win. Pretty wild week. Pretty fun week.
68 pass attempts, career high. 43 completions, career high. 63 rushing yards, career high. Third most passing yards of his career, 446 for Patrick Mahomes, en route to another 30-plus fantasy point game. Oh, Dan Schneier.
Yes.
Xavier McKinney. You shouldn't go on an ATV during the season.
This feels like a very old man-y take from you, Adam. If I'm going to be honest with you, look, he's on vacation. He's on his bye week. It was a guided ATV tour. What do you want these guys to do? Nothing. Just sit there and hang out at home during the bye week.
Like, yeah, take a walking tour. Go on a tour bus. Right. Don't ATV. I don't know, man.
ATV's a little. Well, I will say this. One thing interesting about that, Xavier McKinney has been the Iron Man for the Giants. Hasn't missed a snap since week 3 of last season. And in his contract, there is a clause about not riding ATVs, specifically ATVs.
Interesting.
So, and that, I think it's in a lot of athletes' contracts, actually, because there's been issues with it. So maybe that will come back to haunt him. I hope not. I like him. Look, he made a mistake. He's a young kid.
Yeah, it's okay.
I don't know if it's a mistake.
We're disappointing. We're disappointed. You know, he's a great football player. We want to see. He's a big loss for the Giants. Anyway, we'll tell you about the other injuries. We'll update you on Aaron Jones. We'll update you on Romeo Doubs. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. Just updated you on that. Another big injury for the Packers, actually. David Njoku update. And a lot more. Okay, let's talk about last night's game. Kansas City dominated time of possession. They had the ball for 41 minutes and 28 seconds. Tennessee for 26 minutes and 23 seconds. Chiefs win in overtime, 20-17. A little splash of Kadarius Toney, but a lot of Juju and Kelsey. And Jacob, give me your Chiefs takeaways.
We saw one target for Marquez Valdes-Scantling on 56 routes run, which is really, really impressive. I'm just ready to be done with MVS personally. Like, as someone who watches the Chiefs, and also for fantasy, he's so boring. Like, I want to get Kadarius Toney out there more. I want to get Skem Moore out there. The run game is so ineffective right now. Jerick McKinnon, like, completely dominated the snap rate in the red zone and elsewhere. I don't know. Like, is there anyone on the Chiefs that we feel good about other than Kelsey and Juju? That's pretty much it right now, right?
Mahomes, but I think Hardman is, look, drop MVS. maybe you stash Tony and see what happens if he gains more playing time. You couldn't have expected him to be good in week one. The running backs are, you know, you hope for a CEH touchdown or something. But what do you guys think about Mecole Hardman? This was 9 targets was a season high. But of course, we had a career high 68 pass attempts for Mahomes. But I don't know. I mean, he had a very good game. 6 catches, 79 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets. And now that's 12, 13.2, 28 PPR fantasy points in the 3 games before this. And if I do some quick math, this is 19.9 PPR fantasy points. So Hardman is 56% rostered. Anybody eager to pick him up?
I'm definitely going to be eager to pick up Hardman. For me, it comes down to one thing and one thing only. In the red zone, the Chiefs were kind of the creators of this. Now a lot of teams have tried to mimic them, some more successful than others, but we remember like those long drawn out plays where Mahomes is running around and they make some crazy play in red zone. But the reality is most of what the Chiefs are trying to do and what they do is quick game in the red zone. And to utilize quick game to its fullest extent, you need a speed type, athletic, twitch type player like a Tyreek Hill and now like a Mecole Hardman. And I feel like they're starting to really realize and utilize what he can be in the red zone for them as just a speed weapon. You use all this pre-snap motion, some post-snap motion, misdirection, hit Mecole Hardman right in the flat, get it out of Mahomes' hand and let him do the work with the speed. And so I really like what I've seen from him in the red zone lately. And that to me can carry him to some kind of floor for fantasy moving forward because it's a team that's always in the red zone. So I actually like Hardman a decent amount moving forward.
Okay. I mean, certainly I'm dropping MVS for him. Would you guys rather have Darnell Mooney or Mecole Hardman?
I'd rather have Mooney.
It's close.
Chicago's offenses look pretty good lately. And Mooney's per route rates have been solid all year. I would just say on Dan's note on Hardman, he's third on the team in targets just behind Juju in the red zone. He's been targeted on 26% of his routes in the red zone, which is the highest on the team. And his average depth of target is only 2 yards because like so much of it is just like the little touch passes and just like finding quick ways, screens to get him, you know, get the ball in his hands. And they've kind of always liked him in that role when Tyreek was there. That's kind of how they use them. They'd bring him in for those types of plays specifically. So it could stick, the touchdowns.
Okay. All right. And I think the Titans are about the easiest team you can analyze. They're a one-man band. I'll say, you know, I didn't tell anyone to sit Derrick Henry, but I said I would have ranked him closer to 10th this week instead of, you know, top 5 because I thought they'd get blown out, honestly, with Malik Willis. And he had a, you know, pretty underwhelming track record in games that the Titans got blown out in. But pleasant surprise that this game was so competitive. Titans defense played really well, and Henry had 17 carries, 115 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He did not have a catch. But hopefully Tannehill can change that if Tannehill comes back next week against the Broncos. All right. It is news and notes, then stats, then our 4 big topics. We usually have 5 big topics. I'm going to shorten it to 4 big topics, shorten the length of the episode a little bit here. But I want to tell you about Sportsline. Jacob works for Sportsline. Sportsline's part of our company. And there he's got a Sportsline shirt on. Go to sportsline.com. It's very affordable. There's a monthly fee, but it's basically nothing. It's very, very low. And you get great advice. Get fantasy advice, but you get a lot of gambling advice. So if you love gambling, there's really no better way to get an edge. We have just tremendous experts with so much experience that are doing really well and can help you do really well. So go to sportsline.com. Also, go to our merchandise store. You can just Google search cbssports.com, fantasy football today, CBS Sports Store. If you Google that, or as Dan, like you Bing that, you know, yeah, ask Jeeves, whatever
what?
It is.
Don't you? What are you trying to say? You're the one who brought up Bing, Adam.
You use Jeeves.
No one in their right mind uses anything but Google. But also, why would Bing ever be the second reference? Has anyone ever used Bing before?
Yourself included? I've used it.
Really?
Yeah. I just wanted.
What
to
kind
see.
Of desperate state of mind did you have to be into?
When it first came out, I wanted to see, you know, how did the search results compare?
Did you really?
Yeah, you were curious. I was curious. Very curious. Anyway, whatever search engine you use, just type in Fantasy Football Today, CBS Sports Store, and use our code FantasyFootball20. Buy some merchandise, get some FFT gear, pint glasses, hoodies, hats, water bottles, sweatpants, mugs, t-shirts. Use the code FANTASYFOOTBALL20 to get 20% off your purchase. I have a link to the CBS Sports Store in the episode description, and I have time codes in the episode description as well to help you out, but the code is FANTASYFOOTBALL20. Get some cool FFT gear. Your news and notes. The Colts fired Frank Reich, and they named their former center, Jeff Saturday, who's an ESPN analyst, as their interim head coach. They have the Raiders next week. And yeah, do you think this will have any fantasy impact, Dan? The Colts replacing Frank Reich with Jeff Saturday?
In the immediate, I actually do, Adam. Do you want to know why?
No, they're going to leave it open-ended.
All right. You know what? Relax over there. All right, you're very on the edge of your seat today. Very antsy. Give me a break. Let me settle in a little bit.
Okay.
Deliver my point. My point is being this: for this game coming up this Sunday, the Colts will not have a single person on that staff who has ever called offensive plays in a game. That to me is wild to begin with. So we're getting a purely first-time play caller. They have to get the calls in. They have to work through the sheet. They have to make the calls. You know, basically, you have no time. You just have to reel off, spit off calls. I'm sure some of these guys might have had some experience with similar type things, but as far as calling the offensive plays, they don't have anyone. So bang all those Colts unders for this week. Sit all your Colts players for this week. And I think it's going to be an epic disaster on offense for the Colts for this first game.
I wonder if they go back to Matt Ryan, and that would have a fantasy impact, because then you'd have...
Do you think that Irsay would be willing to do that, given the fact that, and I don't want to say this because I don't want to put, you know, I don't want to make an accusation, but it does feel very tanky with what's been going on here. You know, you hire Jeff Saturday. You don't have anyone who's called offensive plays for a game. You bench Matt Ryan for Sam Ehlinger, who's clearly not an NFL quarterback. So I just feel like in a lost season, they're almost going to maybe lean into the Ehlinger.
I'm just saying, if they go back to Matt Ryan, it would have a fantasy impact. It would be good for fantasy. This is not an offense that we want right now. This Sam Ehlinger offense, it's no. Okay.
Be good for Pittman.
It'd be good for the running backs too in PPR. Sean McVay said things need to change on offense, and we'll see if they sign Odell Beckham. Maybe they start throwing to Tyler Higbee again, who's once again not running routes, 15 to 20 routes in three straight games. Saying things need to change. Let's hope they can make those changes. Aaron Jones has the ankle injury, but he has a good chance to play this upcoming week. He may not miss any time. That would be great. Romeo Doubs is out 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. Christian Watson once again being evaluated for a concussion. Packers cornerback Eric Stokes left in the second quarter with ankle and knee injuries. And Rashawn Gary, their linebacker, tore his ACL. He is out for the season. And they've got a couple of offensive line issues. They're a very beat up team going into this Dallas game. P.J. Walker is going to start. Sam Darnold activated. Baker Mayfield played the second half, but P.J. Walker is going to start this Thursday against Atlanta. Set your DVRs if you cannot watch the game. Falcons and the Panthers, P.J. Walker.
Who would ever want to miss this game?
Deion Jackson left. We don't know about his status. He came back very briefly. David Njoku is hoping to play this week at the Dolphins. Evan Ingram, we'll see. We'll call him day-to-day with a back injury. Talked about Xavier McKinney for the Giants. He's out several weeks with a hand injury. Their next two games are Houston and Detroit, and then they're at Dallas on Thanksgiving. The Bills got a little bit more banged up. Kyer Elam, I think he's a starting cornerback. He's a contributor at the very least. He left in the third quarter. And then Gregory Russo, second-year edge rusher, he left in the first half. He's going to be week to week. Those are the big ones. Sheldon Rankins for the Jets, defensive tackle. He's out week to week with an elbow injury. Chargers can't afford any more injuries on the offensive line. Trey Pipkins, their left tackle, he left in the fourth quarter. He played most of the game. I don't know what his status is. Atlanta right guard Chris Lindstrom left in the third quarter. Rayshon Jenkins for the Jaguars, safety. He's in the concussion protocol. Tennessee lost Bud Dupree in the third quarter. They could have used him down the stretch for sure. Linebacker Bud Dupree. And Arizona already has the worst run-blocking team in football, according to PFF. Right guard Will Hernandez left in the first quarter. They have had a bunch of injuries on the offensive line. All right, Dan, you can go first. Give me some stats to know from Week 9.
Yeah, I don't want to take too many of the ones that Jacob was gave me a heads up ahead of time that he wanted to nail. So I'm going to go into a kind of a deeper waiver wire one to start this off. And it's a player that we talked about a lot on Sunday's show, Adam, as somebody we thought you should maybe start if you're a desperate receiver. And that's Terrace Marshall, the wide receiver out of the Panthers. I know a lot of the production came in garbage time, but P.J. Walker will start again. And I think that's a good thing for the offense in general. What really stands out to me is that he's starting to get some third and fourth down targets. I believe he was up to 30% total combined third and fourth down targets, and 60% of the end zone targets this week for the Panthers went to Terrace Marshall. And that's something we saw go up. You know, that's... And the air yards have kind of been there for him, but we're now starting to see those key money downs, the third downs and the red zone. And that's what we want to see moving forward. So I kind of like him as a fringe flex play, someone you should definitely stash on your bench. So I'll start with Terrace Marshall, kind of a more, highly known player, obviously somebody you're looking to buy high on instead of this. He won't be on your waiver wire, but Dameon Pierce for the Texans. Obviously anyone could watch that game against the Eagles on Thursday and talk about the talent. He kind of looks like some people say like a young Marshawn Lynch out there. I don't really see that, but I do see a running back who has arguably the best contact balance that's entered the NFL this season over Kenneth Walker, over Breece Hall. They have other things, but contact balance as a trait that goes to Walker. But what stands out to me is the Texans
that goes to Pierce, right?
I'm sorry?
That goes to Pierce, contact balance.
Yeah, I'm giving it to Pierce.
Yeah, yep. You said Walker, but just wanted to.
Oh, sorry. Yep, I'm going to give it to Pierce. And what stands out to me from a fantasy standpoint, though, is they finally made the commitment to Texans to use him in their 2-minute no-huddle offense. And that's so important moving forward for fantasy because it's going to give him so many more opportunities to get those 27-touch type games. And I know Lovie Smith talked about how he was so excited to get him that amount of volume in this game, but it was a game where he didn't even score, and yet he still put up a good floor because he's now playing in these 2-minute drills. He played in 100% of the 2-minute no-huddle snaps for the Texans, so that was really what stood out to me in this game. He's somebody now, if he's going to be on the field for that level of snaps, we're talking in the Barkley tier, we're talking in the, you know, the rare McCaffrey maybe tier, the tier of just running backs who don't come off the field. That's very few these days, few and far in between. So if he can reach that tier, I think it puts him into the locked in RB1 range, and he's somebody I'd like to trade for right now.
And that's why we do this, because just on paper, he had no targets against the Eagles.
Yep.
And that's I didn't realize that he had played that role. So that's a great stat on Dameon Pierce. All right, Jacob, what do you got?
Yeah, that's really good stuff on Pierce, and I think maybe it goes a little bit overlooked because it was on Thursday. So I'll start with Rondale Moore, who I brought up quite a bit on the podcast, but he just, when he's in the slot role, he's really going to be productive for fantasy, any type of PPR league. So we've seen him play primarily in the slot in 4 of 6 games, and in those games, he has a 24% target share. He has at least 8 targets and has double-digit PPR points every single game, 70 receiving yards per game. And he's averaging almost 16 PPR points, and that's with just one touchdown. This week, he was targeted on 56% of Arizona's first downs, which is another thing that I bring up quite a bit. So first downs are worth 20%. First down targets are worth 20% more PPR points than targets that come on any other down. And it just is an indication the team is, you know, trying to be intentional about getting the ball into a player's hands. So that's pretty exciting because we've seen DeAndre Hopkins pretty much dominating those looks since he came back. But I think everything we've seen from Rondale is positive, and even if Marquise Brown is back, I think they run enough through receiver sets that he's still going to be pretty productive for fantasy from the slot there. They're always trailing, and they're always in these three receiver sets. I want to talk about Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown might be one of the better buy lows for fantasy if you're trying to make trades heading into the playoffs or just for DFS purposes. I think he's somebody to continue to target. Over the past calendar year, he has the highest target per route run rate in the NFL above Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp, AJ Brown. It's at 31% over the past calendar year, and it's at 32% this year. And since he's been back, he hasn't put up any big totals yet, which is why I think he might be a good buy low candidate. But the volume is absolutely there. He had a 38% target share and an 84% air yardage share this week. 50% of Detroit's first down targets went to Amon-Ra this week. And, you know, we've got T.J. Hockenson out of the equation now. And in 233 career routes with T.J. Hockenson off of the field, Amon-Ra has a 35% target share and a 41% air yardage share. So I think, like, these are really elite rates. And Detroit is, their defense is so bad that they're going to be passing a lot in these games. I think he's a potential top 5, top 8 fantasy receiver. And, like, where do you think his perceived value is right now? It's not that high, right?
No, it's really not. I would say more like 15th.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, I would, you know, you could try to trade a DK Metcalf for him. I would do that. We had an interesting discussion, Alan Lazard versus Christian Kirk. And I think we talked about St. Brown in that same breath on last night's show. But, you know, I'm very enthused about both Lazard and Christian Kirk. Kirk has amazing matchups coming up. We're calling him a buy high right now. He's just been a matchup dependent guy. He's had some really tough ones and he struggled. And but coming up, he's got 4 straight games, Christian Kirk against teams that rank 25th or worse against wide receivers. 3 of those 4 games against teams that are bottom 10 and, you know, or top, I guess they've allowed the 10th most yards to slot wide receivers. They're in the top 10 in that category. So that's looking great for Kirk. Lazard is completely dominating for the Packers. He is the clear-cut number one. Now Dobbs is out 4 to 6 weeks. But Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't know. Would you take him over those two guys? Let's try to rank those three. Lazard, Kirk, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I guess I will go first. And I will go Lazard, St. Brown, Kirk. Dan.
St. Brown for sure, the wide receiver one. He was a player I was going to bring up, but I saw Jacob wanted to hit him. I'm all in on this buy high. I'm following the volume. I'll go Kirk too. So Lazard three. I like Kirk's volume as well. Lazard to me would, I'm still not sold on Lazard for whatever reason. I don't know why.
No, just get on board.
I should.
I would order them the same way as Dan. I think what we've seen from Lazard has been really encouraging, but I think the ceiling is pretty limited by the offensive environment.
Yeah.
Even when Green Bay's offense is like operating as they want to, they're still going to play really slow and just be a pretty low volume offense. So I would clearly take the other two over him. And yeah, Amon-Ra, like I really think he could be top eight receiver the rest of the season. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And so he's definitely one of the top buys. The other two guys I have are running backs. Are you ready to move on to them?
Yeah, sure.
So Jeff Wilson, I think everybody knows like at this point that he played more than Raheem Mostert. And that was really exciting. He out-targeted Raheem Mostert. What I wanted to bring up was that he completely dominated the work in the red zone. He saw 73% of the red zone snaps, 80% of the snaps from inside the 10 in his first game of the team in an explosive offense. Like even if the split doesn't widen and he doesn't continue to take away more work outside of the red zone, just if he has this role in this offense, like he's going to be viable for fantasy. And there's the potential for much more if he's able to overtake Mostert and, you know, earn more of the type of role that Mostert was playing before. Wilson got there. Like, what do you guys think about Wilson? Like, he could legitimately be like a top 20 fantasy running back from this point on.
Well, I love that take, especially because we haven't even considered the factor of potential Raheem Mostert injury at some point. Then that really skyrockets him into the conversation. And I think a lot of this, the reason I like this take by you is because I'm really high on the Dolphins offense. We can talk about that now if we want to, or get to that eventually. But when you're on this kind of offense that's high, as like you said, as high scoring as it has been, and I think it will continue to be, that gives you so many more of those opportunities. And like you said, especially when you're getting the red zone touches and you're getting design plays in the red zone as a receiver, like we saw this week, that's a high valuable role, even if he's going to cede some carries to Mostert. And if Mostert gets hurt, then who knows?
Yeah, I don't know who I like rest of season. I mean, I guess I'd prefer Mostert in the short term. It's really confusing. His first game with the Dolphins, he basically has, you know, very similar amount of touches, and he has one more snap played than Raheem Mostert. So you said he played more snaps, played one more snap. But that's a pretty big deal for his first game with the team.
Right.
Mostert played more on third down, but as Jacob just outlined, Wilson played more in the red zone. The problem is with one game sizes, sample sizes, that could flip next week, and it wouldn't shock me. I mean, it's kind of a toss-up. I think they're both flexes right now. I do think that Wilson has a chance to overtake Mostert, and yeah, Mostert always has a chance to get hurt. So if you have a chance to get Jeff Wilson, it's in a 10-team league or something like that, it's a no-brainer. And yeah, the offense is ridiculously good. They've scored 20, 42, 21, 16, 31, and 35 points in the six healthy games with Tua.
Mm-hmm.
But right now they're humming. Okay.
They're in shootouts all the time.
They're
too,
great for fantasy. Great for fantasy.
Play a lot of man and their defense.
They're so aggressive. Yeah. Yep.
Jacob, another running back.
Yeah. Last one is Josh Jacobs. It's the last 2 weeks, the usage has been down for sure. And I think that's important to point out. I saw in your notes that like he's losing the passing down role that he had when he was just absolutely going nuts the weeks before that. And so like for, you know, the rest of the season, like that is discouraging. He moves out of like a high end RB1 to maybe low end RB1 territory. But like, I just want to point out how good he's been. 66 of 67 yards this week came after contact. He avoided 12 tackles on 17 rushing attempts. And on the year, among 21 running backs with at least 100 attempts, Jacobs ranks top three in basically everything. And he's first or second in almost everything. The only one that he's not is rushing EPA per snap, but every other advanced rushing metric that I look at, he's first or second. And just like from a dynasty perspective, I put out dynasty rankings update on SportsZone last week, and Jacobs was somebody I focused on. He looks the best he's ever looked. And he's always been one of the most potent rushers in the NFL, but like this has been his best year. And his per route rates as a receiver are really pretty solid. They were that way at Alabama, and they have been as a pro. He just like has never had the usage. I think like it's possible that like if he finds himself in the right landing spot after this year, if he doesn't stay in Vegas, he could be like a top three, top five fantasy running back. Like I think the archetype is there for Jacobs, and like no one talks about him that way. People are so negative about Jacobs, especially in Dynasty. And so, yeah, I just wanted to bring him up because like the Raiders have been disgusting lately and he's been disappointing lately, but like Josh Jacobs as a player has been insanely good this year.
And he's still young from a Dynasty standpoint.
Yeah, he's super
and
young.
They didn't pick up his option, so he's probably going somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a shame he didn't play a third down snap in week 9. You talked about the usage, and I don't think they're so bad. I mean, obviously they're not a good team, but I don't think they're a terrible team. They're better than their record. They should be able to stay competitive and you know, be able to use him plenty. Should be able to get plenty of work, but I'd like to see him get some catches. That was a big part of what he was doing in that three-game stretch where he had more than 30 PPR fantasy points. Josh Jacobs, the last 2 weeks has been a combined 19.1 PPR fantasy points at the Saints and at Jacksonville. He's probably a buy low, but you know, he's still like, even without the third down snaps, he still had 3 catches last week. He still had 4 targets the week before in a game that got blown out and they sat their starters for the most of the fourth quarter. So, you know, he doesn't need the third down snaps to get the catches, but we would love to see those come back, of course. Some snap count things to know about. DeAndre Swift played only 10 snaps. Dan Campbell just said he didn't have a setback and they're hoping to get him a little bit more involved. I was kind of high on Khalif Raymond. He played 95% of the snaps. He had a terrible game, but he could still be a guy that shows up in a in a pinch as a number 4 receiver. James Conner played 71% of the snaps in his first game back. We'll talk about him a little bit later. David Montgomery crushed Khalil Herbert in snaps, 52-21. David Montgomery has played 70% or more of the snaps in 4 of his last 5 games. He has 14 to 15 carries in 4 straight games. He is averaging 3.7 yards per carry on a team that has, according to PFF, they are the second best run blocking team in football. He has a mobile quarterback, which usually helps a running back. David Montgomery has now averaged 3.8 yards per carry or less in 3 of his 4 NFL seasons. I am sick and tired of David Montgomery, but apparently the Bears are not. Ramondre Stevenson played 16 snaps on third down. He ran 13 routes. The newcomers, Chase Claypool, 35% of the snaps. Naeem Hines played 4 snaps. TJ Hockenson played 91% of the snaps. Bradley Chubb for the Dolphins played 73%. Kadarius Toney played only 9 snaps. Dan talked about Terrace Marshall. I thought it was interesting that he had 2 end zone targets this week after 3 last week. So that's 5 in the last 2 games for Terrace Marshall, end zone targets. Speaking of end zone targets, here are a few players who are dominating for their teams. Stephon Diggs has 10. Alan Lazard has 7. Travis Kelce has 7 end zone targets. None of their teammates have more than 2. So when the Bills, Packers, and Chiefs throw to the end zone, it almost always goes to Stephon Diggs, Alan Lazard, and Travis Kelce. One caveat is I do believe Gabe Davis has drawn 2 penalties on end zone targets. So he might be more at like 4 if those plays counted, but whatever. And that's pretty much all I got for that. All right, those are some advanced stats for you. When we come back, we'll talk about a very provocative YouTube poll. It's going to get people all fired up.
Uh-oh.
And Dan's review of the mixtape that I made him, and 4 big topics. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBSSports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBSSports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, we are back, and we'll spend a little bit of time on non-football stuff, and then we'll get right back to the football stuff. That's how we will roll here on Beyond the Box Score. All right, first hour YouTube poll. Which TV series is the most overrated? Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, or The Sopranos?
Most overrated.
Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, or The Sopranos. I know. Why does he do this to us? We have to select one.
Why would you put this in, Don? I mean, Thomas, first of all, usually you put a fourth option in. So the fact that you only put three options just to make it harder for us, that's not appreciated. Now, having said that, I think it has to go to Game of Thrones, right? Because only the plebs will say that the... I don't even know if that's the right word. We'll say that the Sopranos ending was bad. It was actually a very strong ending to a show.
Yeah.
And if you think about it more, you understand it. And if you listen to some of the interviews from David Chase, you'll understand it, the creator of the show. Breaking Bad, obviously that show ended great. But Game of Thrones, man, what a pathetic ending to an unbelievable show. It was tracking to be my second favorite show of all time. Nothing will ever beat The Wire. That's the clear 1-1. But it was tracking to be my second favorite show of all time through six seasons. Then season 7 and 8, when they have to go off book, it's just a total epic collapse. And then we find out later, HBO wanted them to do another season, but the show creators wanted it to be done. So they kind of sped it up and rushed it. And so for me, it's Game of Thrones for sure.
Jacob, how many of these shows have you seen?
I've seen all of them.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen Adam dunked on.
No, I was just asking. I haven't seen Sopranos. So I voted for Game of Thrones. I have a lot of issues with Game of Thrones. I thought it was overrated even before season 7 and 8. Still very good. Well, you know, here's my issue with Game of Thrones. I felt like they spent a really long time on some of the storylines and then sped it up so much. It could have been two seasons shorter. They just wasted a lot of time. Every single time they were in Marine, I just wanted to get up, get a glass of water, go to the bathroom, just do anything other than watch the boring ass Marine scenes. And I just didn't love all the storylines. I only liked maybe like half the storylines. I could have used just the Hound would have been great. I didn't want to waste time with some of the other story. Yeah, not, that's an exaggeration. And then I felt like Game of Thrones would sort of resort to gore and nudity. It's like, I'm not opposed to or anything like that, but just if you're judging a show, it's like, I think things are a little boring right now. Let's throw in some nudity and some violence and just entertain the plebs, as Dan would call us. So
I'm not calling us or most
if we're
people
just
that.
Putting a show under the microscope like that, I felt those were some flaws in Game of Thrones. So I voted for Game of Thrones. And then of course, yeah, like the episode where they go north of the wall and they get, you know, trapped amongst the White Walkers, and they somehow, you know, send a raven at light speed.
Anything
that stuff was crazy. Yeah. That they rescued them with the dragon.
It was an epic collapse post season six. But I will say, before season six, it had an insane run from. And I don't know if we're supposed to do spoilers, but you just kind of did some right there.
I think you can spoil Game of Thrones.
I think at this point you can. I mean, the stretch where they had the purple wedding, the red wedding, Joffrey's wedding, obviously the Starks wedding, like that was just an epic stretch of TV. That was as good as gets, so surprising. If you didn't read the books, no one could kind of see any of that coming, right? Like,
well, my brother ruined the red wedding for me.
That's super disappointing.
I haven't told him this, but I'll never forgive him for it.
I wouldn't forgive him either for that, because that was one of the most surprising, shocking moments in
not
TV
for
history.
Yeah,
no. But not for you, unfortunately. I didn't even know you had a brother until this point, but I'm very curious to learn a lot more about him moving forward. This is not a good start for him, though. I'll say
can I ask
that.
You a question? And how old are you, Dan?
33.
When you were, you know, in like middle school, did you watch SpongeBob?
Of course, yeah.
Did you watch Slime Time Live, like the interstitials to SpongeBob? It was on during SpongeBob. They used to slime people. It was a live studio show.
I clearly didn't watch enough SpongeBob then, no.
Okay, my brother hosted that show.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Is he still on TV now?
No, not anymore.
Okay. Well, I'm very curious to learn more about your brother. Older or younger?
He's 9.5 years older than I am.
Oh, that's a huge, massive age
gap. We have
a
sister in between. Yeah.
Okay. Still a massive age gap.
All right, Jacob, any thoughts on TV here? I don't want to get talking about
my family.
There's a lot to
unpack there. We got to talk about Adam being the youngest, but this is for another episode.
I'm sorry for being the youngest. Jacob's the youngest.
I'm the oldest.
He's taking a shot there.
Clearly not a youngest kind of guy. And I think it says a lot that we finally learned Adam's the youngest of the family.
anything to add, Jacob?
Game of Thrones is clearly the worst of that trio. I don't know, like overrated, because I feel like the other two have to have a higher reputation than Game of Thrones, right? People were...
After the ending, yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. Overrated. I still would probably choose Game of Thrones, but I'll just throw out a hot take. I personally like Better Call Saul more than I like Breaking Bad.
Ooh, I like that hot take.
I quit on it. I regret it. I got to get back into it.
The problem with Better Call Saul is a lot of people say it's boring until they wrap up the brother. Well, where'd you quit? Because I don't want to spoil this for
well,
you.
Well, no spoilers right, there. I saw that, but that was basically the last episode I saw. I didn't
quit. Because it changes.
I didn't quit because I was bored. I didn't have a lot of time, and I just, it wasn't a priority for me. But
that's a good take.
Yeah, let's get back on track. I'm sorry, guys. Okay. We'll do Dan's music review of the Aerosmith playlist that I made him at the end of the show. The end of the show will be the last thing we talk about. Let's get to our four big topics. Conrad from the Evergreen State. I do not know what the Evergreen State is.
Evergreen State, that's... Here, let's see. I have horrible guesses every time.
Washington.
I was going to say Washington. I don't know why.
I might have said...
You weren't going to say that. I have Fields and Herbert. Who is better? Justin Fields or Justin Herbert, rest of season. And what would be acceptable if I were to trade one away? I am thin at receiver. After trading for Jamar Chase, I'm 6-3. And who should I try to sell? So, Jacob, if you had both Justins, Justin Fields and Justin Herbert, what would you do?
That's tough. Without knowing the rest of the roster, if there's any correlation or anything in terms of his receivers, tight ends, I think that it is totally reasonable that Justin Fields could outscore Herbert from this point on. They both have some favorable matchups coming up, and the rushing we've seen from Fields is unprecedented, and they're starting to get him some more designed runs as well, not just scrambles. I would say if you're going to trade Fields, if that's who you end up landing on, I would maybe wait until the next couple weeks, because like he's got Detroit and Atlanta up next. And it really doesn't get much better than that. But after that, he's got the Jets, the Packers, the Eagles, and the Bills before getting the Lions in like the fantasy championship.
So and that's a bye. Tough. And a bye. And Herbert doesn't have. I think we should talk about whether or not matchups matter for Justin Fields, though.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You know, because he just shredded the Cowboys 2 weeks ago. He scored the most points of any quarterback against the Cowboys. I think the second most of any quarterback against the Patriots 3 weeks ago. Basically tied with Lamar Jackson for the most points against the Dolphins this past week. He's throwing, it's really weird. He's thrown for 151 and 123 yards in his last two games, and he's been, he's the top quarterback in fantasy over the last 5 weeks, but I'm sure over the last 2 weeks he's also number one. Maybe Burrow, whatever. Do matchups matter for him when he's going to rush? It looks like his floor is going to be 50 to 60 yards. And his ceiling is over 100 yards, So that's a big question you have to ask and answer here, because after the next two games, the matchups are on paper awful for Justin Fields.
Specifically, those teams play a ton of zone, the Eagles, the Packers, and the Bills. And that typically means less rushing for quarterbacks. And the matchups that he's had recently have all been very man-heavy defenses, it's kind of intuitive that, the defense is not facing you. They're facing away from you more often, and it's a little bit easier to scramble. So that could be something for him in terms of being matchup proof.
Okay. That being said, I'm just looking at this right now. The Bills allowed 73 rushing yards to Lamar Jackson. The Eagles allowed only 42 rushing yards to Kyler Murray, but that's actually kind of a lot for Kyler. I mean, I guess it's kind of normal for Kyler. What was the other team we talked about?
Eagles.
I'd say I got the Eagles, the Bills, the Packers. The Packers have already faced Fields. That was in week two. He had only 20 yards and a rushing touchdown. Daniel Jones had 37 yards. Josh Allen, 49 rushing yards. It's really hard to know. I would rather have Fields than Herbert rest of season. I don't know when Keenan Allen is coming back. I don't know when Mike Williams is coming back. I watched both of these quarterbacks, all their throws from this week. I watched the last two games for Justin Fields. They are designing play. They are much different now. His air yards per completion, way down. A ton of wide receiver screens. A lot of really easy completions. They're trying to get him some yak. I don't really know if it's working because he's throwing for 140 yards over the last two games per game. But Herbert looked great. I mean, the interception wasn't his fault. He's still incredibly talented, but he's just lacking playmakers. So I'll just say I'd rather have Fields. His rushing floor is insane. quarterback sucks this year, and I would not trade Justin Fields. I think you could be trading a league winner. If you trade him, it needs to be for an absolute star. I would trade Justin Herbert before I traded Justin Fields. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm on the same camp as Adam as this one. I would be trading Herbert. I would keep keeping Fields. The Bears, this is a stat according to Rich Rebar. It was just so astounding. I wanted to bring it up. The Bears have scored on 53.1% of their drives over the last 3 weeks. That is an insane number. It's the highest rate in the league by far, obviously. You usually have to punt. You have a bunch of punts mixed in, but a big factor in that is what you said. These runs by Fields, some designed, some not. Will some of that come down? Maybe as they face more zone heavy teams, maybe. But at the same time, we've seen such a big shift in the philosophy on offense. This is what I wanted to touch on, why I like Fields so much. The Bears started last game with their first seven plays using pre-snap motion. And then on a vast majority of the plays, they use pre-snap motion, sometimes multiple players in motion, a lot of shotgun motion. They're doing different things to kind of give what we like to call eye candy to the defense. Get the defense's eyes moving in one direction, then have the quarterback Fields go in another and have kind of an easy completion for him. On the left, a little dump down. Like Adam was kind of saying, the average depth of target has come down as well. But I think there's also an opportunity for him to explore more big plays moving forward in his fantasy profile, because they came really close to hitting a big one with Chase Claypool this past week. If not for the pass interference on the defense on a really well-layered ball by him, great ball placement, that's probably a big play to Claypool. So for me, Fields right now, with the way this offense is cooking, with the schematic changes they've made to incorporate more of the design rollout game, get the quarterback on the move, give him an option to throw or run, it just makes him such a dynamic weapon for fantasy. And also, one final thing to note, on the touchdown run he had this week, the long touchdown run, I think he topped at 22.1 miles per hour.
Wow.
Fastest speed of any quarterback. And he now owns the two fastest speeds of any quarterback. I feel like when he came out, based on how they used him in Ohio State, because it was kind of like the same way, you know, we've seen from all those Ryan Day offenses, the systems at Ohio State, it's mostly a passing system. It's mostly drop shotgun, get the ball out. But I think people kind of didn't really give his athletic profile enough credit. And now we're starting to see that with those two runs, obviously topping out the most speed of any quarterback, and what everyone can see with their own eyes when he gets out on the move.
The last thing I'll say about this is don't feel obligated to trade either of those guys. You've got two quarterbacks that the league wants. You don't have to strengthen another team's quarterback situation. You could keep them, especially with the possibility that Fields struggles down the stretch and the possibility that Herbert gets hot down the stretch if his receivers come back. So I know it might, I mean, especially if you're 6-3, as was the question here, maybe you're going to be 7-3. I'm not rushing to make a trade. You know, it's okay to have two great quarterbacks and kind of hoard them a little bit rather than strengthening a potential playoff opponent. All right. McGuire wants to know, I don't know if he's asking about bathing habits, but he just wrote, Fournette washed? Is Leonard Fournette washed up? Is
Jacob, if you don't know, Adam has this weird thing where he thinks you're supposed to say washed up.
I've heard, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody's heard. Sure. Everybody's heard. I'm going to ridicule anyone who says washed. It's not the phrase. We don't get to just drop words like that. Leonard Fournette, yeah, go ahead, Jacob.
Did we want to throw out any wide receiver trade targets for that guy?
Oh, I mean, sure.
I'm sure
you do it for St. Brown, right?
Amon-Ra for sure. Yeah. And then yep. I think Gabe Davis is interesting. He's got some explosive type of schematic matchups coming up. And obviously he's coming off a rough week. And then I think Amari Cooper is somebody who's really interesting as well. With Deshaun coming back, just the underlying data for him has been really strong all year. And if the passing volume increases, he could be like a top 10 receiver down the stretch, and you can get him for cheaper than that. And if you want to take a chance on the Tampa Bay guys and go for it, the volume is there. I have no idea if it's going to turn around.
I'm not doing it for Godwin. I'd do it for Evans, but I need to see something from Godwin first instead of these passes at the line of scrimmage, freaking running back, which might be one of the reasons why Leonard Fournette hasn't gotten a lot of targets in the last few games. So is Leonard Fournette washed up is the question here. Dan, what do you think?
I'll start by saying I wasn't too enthused by some of the advanced metrics and just some of the eye tests, you know, watching him independent of his you know, supporting cast last season when he was such a fantasy dynamo. I think a lot of his fantasy success came from being on the field almost every snap, getting almost every red zone touch, getting a ton of checkdowns from Tom Brady, being on an offense that has a healthy and really effective offensive line, and being in an offense that scores points. This year, we've lost almost all of that. He's coming off the field for Rashad White. He's not an auto guy around the red zone. He's not an auto guy on passing downs. The offensive line is injured and not performing well. The offense isn't scoring a lot of points. You lost everything there. So I just felt like he was a situation-based play to begin with. Now he's lost his situation, and all we have left is this 235-pound plotter who can't really, with no lateral, zero lateral agility. I mean, he still has power. He still has a little bit of upfield burst when he gets vertical, but it's without an offensive line creating holes for him. That's not the profile at running back you want. So I just, that's my take on him. The situation is not what it was. He's not going to be a fantasy dynamo anymore.
He is 22nd per game in non-PPR. Fournette is 11th per game in PPR, but the last three games have been particularly worrisome. 8 to 9 carries in each game.
Right.
Three targets. Did have 7 targets in week 9. That was good. 2, 3, and 5 catches. A bit of an increased role for Rashad White. I don't think it's a fantasy relevant one, but a bit of like he took a little bit of third down share from Fournette. That's, you know, getting not even, but it's not completely dominated by Fournette. I do sort of feel like he's a buy low. People think he sucks. He might, but he still has a very valuable role. You know, it is role based, but he's much more likely to get a goal line touchdown than Rashad White. He's still going to catch some passes. I would be looking to buy low on him, but I wouldn't. You know, he was a second round pick. He's not going to be that good. But if people are so negative on Leonard Fournette, I still think there are some good games ahead, but that's just me. We need more than like 12 touches. That'd be nice. Jacob, where do you stand on Leonard Fournette?
Yeah, I think Dan hit it perfectly. Like, Leonard Fournette, is he washed? I was asking myself that like 3 or 4 years ago, I feel like. And like, he's never been efficient. That's the thing, is like, you just kind of, we got accustomed to the fact that it didn't matter if he was washed or if he was good, because for fantasy, he got everything he needed to be good for fantasy. And like, he has kind of lost that. Like, his target per route run is a career low. He's actually, his efficiency as a receiver is like the best it's been in quite some time. And then if you just look at his efficiency metrics compared to Rashad White, he's averaged more yards before and after contact than Rashad White. He's avoided tackles at a higher rate. He has a higher explosive rush rate than Rashad White. All that really surprised me. I think mostly what the problem is the offensive line and the team environment as a whole. I think all of those things are really weighing him down. So again, if you think Tampa Bay is going to bounce back, then yeah, definitely these guys, Fournette, the receivers are for sure buy lows.
They are awful in the red zone, awful on third down. Tampa Bay is 30th in red zone percentage. The only two teams have converted fewer of their red zone trips into touchdowns, the Broncos and the Colts. So I can tell you that, but I can't tell you that it's going to get a lot better. You know, that's the thing. Is it going to get better? I don't know. It's the key, I guess, to their offense. All right. So I think we all agree on what he is. The question is like, can he still give you some good fantasy games enough to matter? I'd say yes. Obviously less conviction than I had, you know, a month ago. This is from Aldwin Parchment. What are the likelihood that the no questions asked players return to their status? No questions asked. Some of these guys, doesn't matter what we call them, but I wouldn't say Connor was a no questions asked or Montgomery was, but he says James Connor, Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Leonard Fournette, Aaron Jones, David Montgomery. Dan, what do you think the odds are that this group of 6 running backs, or how many of them, can get back to their status? I'm going to guess their draft status.
Okay, let's take this one by one here, right? So let me start with Connor. Connor, I'm going to give a chance of him getting back to his draft status at 35%. Jonathan Taylor, I'm going to give a chance of his getting back to his draft status at 15%.
Wait,
Fournette. Fournette actually has a little bit more of a chance, I guess, if they phase out White from the offense and they start to score more. So I'll go 45%. Is that Aaron Jones as the last one?
Yeah, Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones, I'm going to go like 80%, because I really felt like they were starting to funnel the offense through him in the last 2 weeks before this one where he got injured. And now we're learning that he's healthy enough that he might even play this week. He's supposed to play this week. So Aaron Jones, I'll give 80%. David Montgomery, he was a kind of a middle round, fifth round pick. And Adam, you made a decent, I think you made a pretty strong case for him, especially if that Bears offense continues to be as strong as we think. So I'm going to go 70% on him just because he didn't have the same kind of, draft status as the rest of these guys.
Yeah, Dan, you didn't just do ignored, Swift. Yeah, but
just ignored Swift. DeAndre Swift, just like he was Dan Campbell.
Yeah, I did ignore him like I was Dan Campbell. Swift, I mean, he was expected. He was in that Javonte Williams range, Saquon Barkley range of drafts before this past August. So I'll go with him 15%. I just don't see any way they phase Jamal Williams out of this offense. And more importantly, I don't see any way they take Williams out of the red zone. That's what's really killing Swift.
Oh, yeah. The goal line specifically.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, you said I made a case for Montgomery. I railed about how bad he is and how I'm so sick and tired of David Montgomery, but apparently the Bears aren't. And that is a decent case for him.
No, but your case, exactly. Right. That was what I was talking about. Your case was mostly the touches and the snap share versus Herbert.
So frustrating.
And if you're on a great offense and you're getting that kind of volume, I kind of like Montgomery.
You'd think. Any disagreement there with what he said, Jacob?
No, I think he did a good job there. And like, yeah, it kind of is a case for Montgomery for fantasy. It's crazy that like it seemed like Herbert was really starting to eat into the split there. It was a 52-48 split between the two in favor of Montgomery in terms of running back rushes the two previous weeks. This week it was up to 67% for Montgomery. And so like Herbert had been dominating and had been starting to take carries in a way that we hadn't really ever seen before. And I thought maybe that it was just going to be a more even split going forward, but like things definitely swung back in Montgomery's favor this week. 69% snap rate, 80% of the red zone snaps went to Montgomery. They love him. I don't know. He's the guy there. I think Aaron Jones is exciting. Like if you can buy low on him at this point, I would. He's got a lot of potential shootouts remaining, especially like the fantasy playoffs. The Rams is not a great matchup, but after that, it gets the Dolphins and the Vikings, and those are, you know, games where he could explode. James Conner, I mean, 72% snap rate, 66% round involvement. I thought he looked pretty good this week. He was somebody who we saw really get like 80-90% of the snaps early in the season. And I thought with how well Eno Benjamin played that it might be more of an even split. But like right away, Conner came back and assumed pretty much in almost every down role. And it's possible that that could expand what we saw earlier in the season as he continues to, you know, show that he's healthy.
I'm always going to be low on Conner. I think that they have a terrible run game.
Yeah.
I think he's like a poor man's version of Leonard Fournette, basically. And they are rated 32nd by PFF in run blocking. So PFF thinks they're the worst run blocking team in football. The only thing I wanted to see, and I don't know if you know this, I might actually have it right now. Third down split between the two of them, Benjamin and Conner. Conner, wow, 12 snaps to 2. Yeah. So he's the third down. That is a great role. But the team bothers me. They are a train wreck and awful at running the football. But that 70% of the snaps and the third down roll and the red zone work is huge for Conner. So I can't completely shut that down.
And even with all that, what are we, like borderline top 20, like Jeff Wilson-ish type of guy?
And I'd have to take him ahead of Wilson.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more upside with Wilson, honestly.
Without a Fournette injury? I mean, sorry, without a Mostert injury?
Yeah. I think it's possible that he could. I don't know if they necessarily wanted Mostert to play the role that he was playing. I think Chase Edmonds is just like really, really bad. And then they got a guy who is familiar with the system. And I think it's possible that he could push into the role that Mostert was playing. And Mostert kind of takes the role that Edmonds was playing. And like if that happened, I think Wilson would definitely be more valuable than Conner.
Okay. Our last question is from Ballpark Fantasy. Our last topic, TJ Hockenson is the topic. Hockenson had 9 targets, he caught all of them. 70 yards at Washington. Washington, by the way, allowed the fewest fantasy points to tight ends going into the game. They even shut down TJ Hockenson earlier in the year. He had 3 catches for 26 yards with the Lions, much better in his second game against the Commanders. But he is the first tight end to have more than 40 yards against Washington this year. That includes Evan Ingram, Hockenson himself, Dallas Goedert, who left with an injury, Robert Tonyan. Anyway, great start for him. Interesting involvement. They ran at least 2 wide receivers or tight end screens to him, but he also was just abusing people, getting wide open over the middle of the field. It was a great debut for TJ Hockenson. He does have Buffalo and Dallas and New England next, and then the Jets. But like I said, Washington was number 1 against tight ends. So Jacob, what do you think of TJ Hockenson going forward?
I think he's really interesting. I think he definitely gets a boost from what we saw in Detroit. Playing alongside Justin Jefferson is a real, like, tangible boost that he gets. Like, has he ever played with someone who can stretch the field like this and open up the short intermediate area for him? No.
Yeah. Great point.
He had a 91% snap rate, 86% route involvement rate. Like, those are really elite for the tight end position. He came in and got that right away. 23% target share, 17% for Adam Thielen. I would expect them to both kind of hover around 20%. I wouldn't necessarily overreact. I don't know if he's going to join the elite tier yet. His average depth of target was still only 5.6 yards, so it's going to be tough for him to be super efficient playing that type of a role. But I think there should be lots of space for him over the middle in this offense. And so I think it's definitely an upgrade from what we saw in Detroit.
Dalton Schultz or TJ Hockenson rest of season?
Hockenson.
I'll take Schultz.
Schultz for you guys both?
Yeah. Schultz for me, but I do like Hockenson a lot too. I really like the fact that the main stat you brought in there, Jacob, which was the route participation, 86% in his first game. What does that tell me? It tells me that this offense was looking for him. They view him as the missing cog. They're going to get involved right away. It's somebody who can help move the chains and have them be an offense that can, you know, attack all three levels, not just the intermediate and the deep half where you see Jefferson thrive. But with that said, Jacob, part of the reason why I kind of argue Schultz or just not get too high myself on Hockenson is the same reason why, you know, 2 Augusts ago, not this past one, but 2 Augusts ago when everyone was moving Hockenson into that third, fourth, fifth round range, or more like fourth, fifth round pre-draft range. People loved him. I argued against him because I felt like the talent wasn't there. I don't really see much burst post catch. I don't really see anything really at the catch point, body control, any kind of acceleration, any really traits to that make me think that he can be like a superstar in fantasy or somebody who can be a difference maker. Can he be a huge PPR guy like a Dalton Schultz type? Sure. But then I kind of trust Schultz a little more in that offense, especially without really anything, any Jefferson type to kind of hog more of the volume. So I guess that's where I'm at. I don't love the talent as much.
All right, look, if the Cowboys get Odell Beckham, maybe that changes things.
True.
But, you know, it's a lot to ask about Odell Beckham, too. All right, that's it for the topics. Last topic here, the fifth big topic. I made an Aerosmith playlist for Dan Schneier because he doesn't think they're good. I think he's wrong. I know he loves classic rock, so people think that Aerosmith is just, you know, like a, I don't know, 90s rock band with a bunch of those ballads that you heard in middle school, but they're not. So he listened to it twice, which I really appreciate, and I have no idea how he felt about it, so please don't break my heart. What did you think of the playlist?
So I'll start by saying I like that you refer to it as a playlist. Jamie infamously now referred to it as a mixtape, just showing his age.
No, he didn't
call
it a mixtape. He called it a mixtape because he couldn't even pronounce it right.
Right. He could, but either way, no one's talking mixtapes these days. Spotify playlist. I'll say this. Some things I like, some things I didn't. I'll start with the things I didn't like because that's how I do things on this show, especially when I'm talking to Adam. What I didn't like is Adam put like 4 of the most famous songs ever on there. Like I thought I was getting a deep cut, a type of playlist. There was only like 12 songs, I think, on the playlist. It was either 12 or 14 to begin with. And either 4 or 5 were like Dream On and like all the ones that I've already heard and that we've all heard. So I'll start by saying that as far as I'm going to rule those out, the songs I hadn't heard. So that's the next 10 of them. I'll give it to Adam. He's right. They are up my alley. There's good guitar. They're good classic rock. There's bluesy elements to them, which is what I really like. I love blues guitar. So I'll say this. Overall, it was a definite win from Adam. I'm still surprised he put like the Dream Ons of the world onto there. Like, I just don't understand that. Like, I thought the whole idea was I've never heard of Aerosmith. Like, did he really? My question in as my head as I was listening through for a second time was, did Adam really think I've never heard Dream On before? And it wasn't just Dream On. It was like every one of the most popular songs. So I'm still a little surprised by that. I was taken aback by it. But as far as the non-Dream On type songs, Adam nailed it.
All right. That's great. I was just trying to give you a more enjoyable playlist. I was putting, you know, some of their smash hits on there. And honestly, the way you were talking about Aerosmith, saying that My Morning Jacket is a better band, it made me think maybe he's never heard Dream On before. Maybe he's never heard the riff on Walk This Way. Like, I don't know.
Walk This Way is a great song. I'd heard it a million times, but it's still an amazing song and still one of their best ones. And that's right up my alley. So you nailed that part of it. But some of the more obscure ones that I hadn't heard, and I don't even know if they're considered obscure. And another thing I'll say that I like about your playlist, Adam, you did give a lot of variety. It wasn't just one album. Like, it wasn't like, oh, back then they had this one album that was like good rock. It was like, okay, there's like different songs from different albums. So there's good variety too. So yeah, nailed it.
I got every decade in there too. A couple of the newer ones, which are not bad.
Jacob, are you an Aerosmith fan or do you listen to rock?
I listen to a ton of rock growing up. I've kind of fallen out of it a little bit, but I'm curious about this playlist.
Oh, I'll send it your way. It's just called Aerosmith.
The only one who doesn't get it is Jamie, just based on how he talked about
No,
it.
Jamie would hate it. Jamie, I cannot figure out Jamie's music I don't know
he
what
strikes me as someone who doesn't listen.
I don't really know what music means to Jamie. Like, it's very music's huge for me. I don't think Jamie really likes music.
I don't think it means anything to him.
No. All right. Well, that's our Beyond the Box score. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. Always fun. We'll talk to you with the waiver wire tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
Docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.